Chapter 6. Love Grows. One evening in June, as Tess was walking in the garden, she heard Angel playing his harp. Although he was not a very good player, Tess was fascinated. She followed the music, stepping softly through the wet grasses and weeds, sending mists of pollen up into the air. She stopped quite near to him, but he did not see her. The sounds of his harp passed through her like warm winds. Her body moved gently to the music, and her eyes filled with tears. The tune ended, and Tess realized with alarm that he was walking towards her. She turned to go, but he called out to her,
"Why do you hurry away, Tess? Are you afraid?"
"Oh, no, sir. Not of outdoor things."
"But you are afraid of indoor things."
"Well, yes, sir."
"What things?"
"I can't say."
"Life in general?"
"Yes, sir."
"Ah, I'm often afraid of that, too. But why should a young girl like you feel that way?"
She was silent.
"Come, Tess, tell me. I promise I will tell no one else."
"I seem to see a long line of tomorrows getting smaller and smaller in the distance. They all seem very cruel. They all seem to say, 'I'm coming, beware of me.'"
He was surprised that she had such sad imaginings. She seemed to be expressing, in her own simple way, the feelings of the age, the pain of modernism. What we call advanced ideas, he thought, are really just the latest definition of sensations that men and women have been feeling for centuries. Still, it was strange that such ideas had come to her while she was still so young. It was more than strange. It was impressive, interesting, pathetic. Tess thought it strange that a well-educated young gentleman could be afraid of life in general. Why did such an admirable, poetic man not feel it a blessing to be alive? Certainly, he was now working outside his social class, but he did so of his own free will. Still, she wondered why such a book-loving, musical, thoughtful young man should decide to be a farmer and not a parson, like his father and brothers. Every day, every hour, he learned one more little thing about her, and she about him. At first, she thought of him as an intellect rather than as a man. She compared her own modest worldview to his and felt discouraged. One day, when he was talking about the ancient Greeks, he noticed that she looked sad.
"What's the matter, Tess?"
he asked.
"I was just thinking about myself. My life has been wasted. When I see how much you have read and seen and thought, I feel what a nothing I am."
"Don't worry about that. I will help you learn anything you want to learn. I could teach you history, for example,"
said Angel with enthusiasm.
"No."
"Why not?"
"I don't want to learn that I am just one of many. I don't want to read books that tell me that my thoughts and actions are just like those of thousands of other people before me."
"Don't you want to learn anything?"
"I want to know why the sun shines on the just and the unjust alike,"
she answered in a trembling voice.
"But they don't teach that in books."
"And don't be so bitter, Tess,"
said Angel, although he had often felt the same way in the past. He looked at the side of her face and noticed the curl of her eyelashes and the softness of her cheek. Reluctantly, he went away. When he was gone, Tess felt angry with herself. How stupid he must think her! She wanted him to like her. She thought about her noble ancestors. The next day, Tess asked Mr. Crick if Mr. Clare had respect for old, noble families.
"Oh, no,"
replied Mr. Crick emphatically.
"Mr. Clare is a rebel. He hates old families. He says that they used up all their strength in the past and have nothing left now. He thinks that is why so many old families around here have lost their wealth and become common people. One of our dairymaids, Retty Priddle, is descended from the Paradells, an old family that once owned lots of land around here. When Mr. Clare found this out, he was very severe with the poor girl. 'You'll never be a good milkmaid,' he said, because your family wasted all its strength fighting wars in the Middle Ages. And some time ago, a boy came to ask for a job. He said his name was Matt. We asked him what his surname was, and he said he didn't have one. We asked him why, and he replied, "Well, I suppose my family has not been established long enough." When Mr. Clare heard that, he jumped up and shook the boy's hand, saying, "You're exactly the kind of boy we want."
Tess was glad she had not told Angel about her family. Now she knew he did not respect old families. Besides, another dairymaid was as good as she in that respect. The story about the boy made Tess suspect that Angel was interested in her only because he thought that she too was from a new family. The summer matured, producing a new generation of flowers, nightingales, and other ephemeral creatures. The sunlight made flowers open and sap rise in the trees. The warmth of the sun filled the air with perfumes. Life at Talbot Hayes Dairy went on comfortably. Tess and Claire watched each other. They were balanced on the edge of passion. They were moving irresistibly towards each other, like two rivers in one valley. Tess had never been so happy. One reason was that the life she lived now was completely appropriate for her. The other reason was that she, like Angel, was not yet aware of being in love. She was not yet at the stage when one asks oneself disturbing questions. Where will this new feeling carry me? What effect will it have on my future? What relation does it have to my past? They met every day at dawn. It was Tess's job to wake the other dairy workers, and every morning she climbed the ladder to Angel's attic room and called him in a loud whisper. He rose immediately, got dressed, and went downstairs. All the other dairy workers slept for another 15 minutes before rising, so usually Tess and Angel spent the first 15 minutes of the day together, alone, out in the humid air and the rosy light of dawn. Sometimes it seemed to them that they were Adam and Eve, alone on the earth. The soft light of those mornings often reminded him of the resurrection hour, though he never imagined that the Magdalene was by his side. The early morning light gave her face a radiant quality, so that she looked ghostly, like a soul walking free of its body. It was then she impressed him most deeply. She was no longer a milkmaid. She seemed to him the essence of womanhood. He called her Artemis and Demeter. She did not like this, because she did not understand the references.
"Call me Tess,"
she said, and he did. One evening, Tess went to bed early. She fell asleep, but a little later she was woken by the sounds of the other three milkmaids who shared her room. She opened her eyes and saw them looking out of the window together, watching someone in the garden below.
"Don't push. You can see as well as I can,"
said Retty, the youngest of the three.
"It's useless for you or me to be in love with him,"
said Marion, the eldest.
"He loves someone else."
"Is loves him too,"
said Retty.
"I saw her kissing his shadow on the milk house wall."
Is blushed.
"Well, I do love him, but so do you, and so does Marion."
Marion's round face was always very pink. Now it became even pinker.
"But he likes Tess best,"
she said.
"I've seen him watching her."
"He won't marry any of us,"
said Iz.
"He's a gentleman, and we are just milkmaids."
Tess lay in her bed and thought about Angel. One day she had heard Mr. Crick joking with him. Mr. Crick had said,
"You will marry a fine lady, sir."
But Angel had replied,
"No, I won't. Perhaps I will marry a farm woman, someone who can help me on the farm."
But Tess knew that she, with her terrible secret, could never marry anyone now. From that day on, Tess tried to avoid Angel's company. When she was with him, she drew his attention to the other milkmaids.
"They blush when you look at them,"
she said.
"Why don't you marry one of them?"
She felt that this was the right thing to do. What right had she, who could not marry anyone, to enjoy the sunshine of his smiles. Now that she knew the other milkmaids loved him, she felt it was her duty to give them a chance of winning his love. Nevertheless, it broke her heart to do so. The hot weather of July came, then the rains began. It rained heavily and frequently. The fields were wet and the streams were full. One Sunday morning, after the milking was done, Tess and the other three milkmaids decided to go to Mellstock Church. It had rained heavily the night before, but now the sun was shining. Walking along the lane to Mellstock, the girls came to a place where the rain had flooded the road. On weekdays, they simply walked through the water, but today they were wearing their best shoes. Suddenly, they saw Angel Clare walking towards them through the water.
"Are you trying to get to the church?"
he asked.
"If you want, I will carry you over."
The four girls blushed.
"You can't carry me, sir. I'm too heavy,"
said Marion.
"Nonsense,"
said Angel.
"Put your arms around my shoulders. That's right. Now off we go."
He walked back across the flood with Marion in his arms, then returned to the other three. One by one, he carried the blushing milkmaids across the water. He left Tess till last.
"You must be so tired, Mr. Clare. Perhaps I can walk around the flood."
"No, Tess,"
he replied.
"I carried the others just so that I could have the pleasure of carrying you."
"They are better women than I."
"Not to me,"
he replied. She blushed at this. No definite words of love had been spoken, and he did not wish to take unfair advantage of the situation. He walked slowly, however, enjoying every moment that she was in his arms. At last, they reached the other side, and he set her down. He said goodbye and went on towards Talbot Hayes. The four milkmaids moved on together as before, but the mood was changed. Finally, Marion broke the silence.
"He likes you best,"
she said to Tess.
"We could see it as he brought you over."
Tess's heart ached. She knew she loved him. She had tried to repress her feelings, to give one of her friends a chance of winning his love, but she had not tried hard enough, and this was the result. That night, in the bedroom, Tess said,
"I don't think that marrying is in his mind at all. But if he asks me, I will refuse. I will refuse any man who asks me."
"Why?"
asked Retty.
"It cannot be,"
said Tess.
"I heard that his family has chosen a wife for him,"
said Iz.
"She is a lady. They say he does not love her, but he is sure to marry her."
"Ah,"
thought Tess.
"So it was just a passing summer love after all."